If they want the nickel and dime stuff, I'll tell you one thing we can do.
What's that, sir?
This time of the year, there should be a hotline you can call with questions about cooking turkeys, a special 800 number where the phones are staffed by experts.
There is.
What do you mean?
The Butterball hotline.
Butterball has a hotline?
Yeah. It's an 800 number. The phones are staffed by experts.
Are you kidding me?
No.
God, I'm sorry. I love my country. Charlie, get me the number for the Butterball hotline.
Yes, sir.
Hello?
How can I help you, sir?
Well, first let me say, I think this is a wonderful service you provide.
Well, thank you. May I have your name, please?
I'm a citizen.
I'm sure you are, sir, but if I have your name, I can put your comments in our customer feedback form.
I'm Joe Bethersonton. That's one T and with an H in there.
And your address?
Fargo.
Your street address, please?
Zip code, Fargo, North Dakota, right now.
My street address is 11454 Pruder Street. And it's very important that you put street down there because sometimes it gets confused with Pruder Way and Pruder Lane. It's apartment 23R, Fargo, North Dakota. Zip code 50504.
Thank you. Your voice sounds very familiar to me.
I do radio commercials for products.
And how can I help you?
Stuffing should be stuffed inside the turkey. Am I correct?
It can also be baked in a casserole dish.
Well, then we'd have to call it something else, wouldn't we?
I suppose.
If I cook it inside the turkey, is there a chance I could kill my guests? I'm not saying that's necessarily a deal breaker.
Well, there are some concerns. Two main bacterial problems are Salmonella and Campylobacter jejuna.
All right. Well, first of all, I think you made the second bacteria up. And second of all, how do I avoid it?
Make sure all the ingredients are cooked first. Saute any vegetables, fry sausage, oysters, etc.
Excellent. Let's talk temperature.
165 degrees.
No, see, I was testing you. The USDA calls for turkeys to be cooked to an internal temperature of 180 to 185 degrees.
Yes, sir. I was talking about the stuffing, which you want to cook to 165 to avoid the health risks.
Okay. Good testing.
You have an accurate thermometer?
Oh, yeah. It was presented to me as a gift from the personal sous chef to the king of auto sales in Fargo. Phil Behind, the man can sell a car like anything.
Very good, sir. You have a good Thanksgiving.
And you do, too. Thanks a lot. That was excellent. We should do that once a week.
Pre-recorded live from Pennsylvania and Nebraska, U.S. of A., it's the Bob and Elvis Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Elvis Dingledean.
We must stop the terror. I call upon all nations to do everything they can to stop these terrorist killers. Thank you. Now watch this drive.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality. The Bob and Elvis Show.
See, the first guy was the fake president, the TV president.
Yeah.
And a buttload more dignified than the second guy.
Yeah, sounding a great deal more serious and respectable than now watch this drive.
I mean, we forget that shit. He actually, the president of the United States, days after September 11th, said, we've got to hunt down these terrorist killers. Now watch this drive.
Yeah.
Unfucking believable.
Out there golfing and yeah. Instructing nations. I call on all nations. Now watch me play some golf.
I mean, this is exactly what I wanted to lead off the show with. Strangely enough, usually we go off on a tangent on something else, but remember, I mean, it's so easy to forget how fucked up everything was for years. I mean, literally years after 9/11. I mean, all of America went fucking crazy.
Yeah. I turned into a liberal because of it.
Yeah.
God help us.
Dennis Miller turned into a douchebag.
Yeah. Fear.
I don't even... are you going to watch that HBO special? Dennis Miller has an HBO special coming up.
No. And before 9/11, I wouldn't have missed it. I'd have been so excited. Yeah. But after he went full on... After he went, like, football, right-wing, Fox News douchebag, he can suck it. not interested. He's just not funny anymore.
I mean, I give him some credit for being ballsy enough to say that he's, you know, he peed his pants. Like, he fucking shit his pants like a little baby after 9/11. And that's, I mean, literally, he has said that. He said that 9/11 scared the piss out of him.
Yeah.
And that's why he kind of, you know, more or less switched teams. Not that he.
And that's fine. I won't. Especially people with deep ties to New York. I don't know if he was in New York at the time. I'd have pissed my pants if I was, you know, in Manhattan at the time. But I'm not discounting the fear. I'm just saying, look, it doesn't really require you to abandon all your principles and become a douche.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like as soon as he like pooped in his big boy pants there. After 9/11, it's like he shit out all of his funny.
Yeah, I mean, old thing about conservatives just aren't funny. I mean, there's just nothing funny about. I mean, how do you make a punchline out of like poverty and low taxes? It's like, oh, poor people, they got to eat. That's funny, ha, ha, ha.
Yeah,
you know, there's just nothing funny about conservatism.
I mean, literally, the funny just fell out of his asshole.
Yeah,
I mean, he saw the planes crash into the buildings and went. And then out went his funny.
Oh, there's my funny.
There's my funny. All right, better flush that.
He was one of the greats in the day. You know, his old HBO show was not to be missed. He was up there with, you know, Bill Maher in his early days. I don't find Bill Maher's stand-up funny anymore either.
Yeah, well, I mean, but, you know, Bill Maher's stand-up, well, at least his monologue on the show is so Johnny Carson. It's like Johnny Carson really with fuck in it.
It really is, yeah.
Yeah.
But his stand-up acts have gotten more and more... up his own ass, like just very sanctimonious and just unfunny. But I love him as a. I mean, the Bill Maher show is the perfect vehicle for him. I mean, politically incorrect. There's another thing, another casualty of 9/11. Politically incorrect.
Yeah,
you know, he got shit canned for saying that. You know, speaking some truth. The whole show's called Politically Incorrect. How can you fire somebody over being politically incorrect on a show called Politically Incorrect?
Well, that's where that was part and parcel of America going batshit after 9/11. Hey, it's the Bob and Elvis Show. Bob Seska here in Pennsylvania. Elvis Dingledean there in Nebraska. Today's show brought to you by Bubble Genius and Pomegranate Journeys. And I wrote about that whole thing in this week's Huffington Post. I mean, the big issue of the week, everyone's been talking about all of the TSA screening at airports and things like that. Suddenly this is a thing. And why is it a thing? Well, there are two inciting incidents. There was the guy who videotaped himself refusing to have a backscatter scan and then refusing a pat down, saying the words, if you touch my junk, I'll have you arrested. Mm-hmm. And then, but I mean, in and amongst all of that, I mean, Drudge has been hitting the body scanner thing for at least a couple of weeks now. Now, I haven't really tracked when he started doing it. But I mean, every time there's a body scanner story, Drudge hits it. But it was like really at an all-time high in the past 2 weeks. So therefore, because as Mark Halperin says, Drudge rules the media's world.
Is Drudge, I could give a fuck about Drudge. Is he pro or con?
He's actually, I agree with Drudge. He's against the body scanners. And
yeah, all conservatives and libertarians should be.
This
should be an issue that crosses the ideological spectrum. We should all be anti-radiation poisoning.
Yeah. Well, we should all be anti-unconstitutional invasions of privacy and personal dignity. I mean, that's what it is. I mean, you go to an airport and you're leaving your dignity at the door. I mean, from the moment you step out of the cab or out of your car there at the terminal, it is just like one ass rape after another. I mean, it's just like you might as well just bring, you know, big photographs of your bathing suit area and x-rays of your colon. And
we'll all be flying naked soon, and that'll be good. I mean, I'll enjoy that. but, you know, don't anyone tell me that Christmas Day testicle bomber failed. He succeeded beyond anybody's wildest imagination. I mean, just like 9/11 continues to succeed beyond Bin Laden's wildest expectations, so too did ball bomber because now, and that little, I don't know if you saw that one of those animated clip things on Sullivan yesterday, but they stole my joke, which was the next thing is that a terrorist has got to literally put a bomb up his rectum so that they're literally, you know, airports are now colonoscopy centers. I mean, they literally are going to have to shove something up their ass so that the next step in TSA wonderfulness is being, you know, infiltrated in our no-nos.
In
the bad place.
And that's all they have to do anymore. They don't actually have to have a successful terrorist attack. All they have to do is attempt something, and then everyone is batshit crazy, including people like Drudge. And that was that's been my point in all of this. He's against the body scanners. I'm against the body scanners. I've been using the terrorists one as a headline. He used the terrorists of one as a headline. But the difference here is that it was Drudge and all the fucking pee pants wing nuts for 8 years during the Bush years screaming and yelling about security at all costs. You can't have a constitution if you're dead. It's just a piece of paper. It's, you know, the First Amendment doesn't matter. It matters, you know, as Rush Limbaugh says, nada, zilch, zero.
If you're dead. Add to that all the anti-Muslim sentiment those fuckers throw out.
Right.
You know, you'd think they'd be lining up for if you're vaguely brown or you know, Middle Eastern looking, you get the full rectal treatment. But for Whitey, why is Whitey being pulled aside? That's probably their biggest problem. It's grandma. Because that one time that TSA pulls aside a 70-year-old woman with a colostomy bag, then it's, you know, beyond the pale.
Well, then there was also that local news reporter whose daughter was patted down. But I mean, you know, you reap what you sow. I mean, you spend 8 years screeching and crying and hiding under your fucking covers like a baby, you know, thinking there's like evildoer toe monsters under your bed waiting to spring out and grab your feet and crash a plane into them.
This
is what happens. I mean, you demand this shit. And anyone who wants to pull back, anyone who wants to pull back on security measures is instantly labeled as being with the terrorists. I mean, as being a terrorist sympathizer. Because, I mean, how do you make that argument? You say, okay, well, you know, this is fucking stupid that I got to take my shoes off and my belt. Soon it's going to be pants. And then they're sticking me in a Star Trek transporter, bombarding me with radiation and seeing my junk all naked on one of those weird images, which they can save, by the way,
which was
a total lie. I mean, the TSA, Homeland Security, all these people were saying, you know what? They can't save these images. It's that feature is disabled. Well, what the fuck? Yes. Suddenly we hear a story where, you know, at a courthouse in Florida, they saved 23,000 images of people. Now, granted, those images, they had a setting turned on where the actual details of that person were kind of blocked out.
Yeah, I mean, they don't give you your name and address.
Like, no.
But again, it's, you know, someday there's going to be an internet fetish site for people that like to yank it to, you know, TSA body imaging pictures. So
it's the principle of it.
Yeah, it's just the police state run absolutely fucking amok. And this president in particular cannot stand up to this sort of thing.
No.
Politically, you know, maybe in a second term when he's got nothing to lose, you know, second term presidents can really take the gloves off because they literally have nothing to lose except, you know, impeachment is really the only thing that can stop them. But right now, we're just going to have to bend over, take it in the no-no, take it in the bad place and get on our plane.
Yeah.
For those of us that are unlucky enough to have to fucking travel.
Well, I mean, this has become the third rail. I mean, any politician who says, you know what? This is fucking stupid that we have to go through all this shit where everyone is paranoid. Cut the crap. There is no real terrorist threat. You know, that person is going to be crucified.
Yeah.
Crucified.
Well, I wouldn't say the last thing. I mean, there is a terrorist threat.
Well, there is.
There's always
a
terrorist threat.
Well, there's also
the threat of being struck by lightning while singing zippity fucking doodah on a grand piano. So, you know.
Yeah.
The chance of everything. What are we going to do? Just legislate, you know, make the worst thing you can do at any time of any day is get in your fucking car. You're a goner.
Yeah. I mean, in that Wall Street Journal piece, I mean, they basically spelled it out where the odds being 1 in 25 million, which actually, you know what? Nate Silver put it at a little tighter. I think he said 1 in 10 million, something like that.
Oh, well, that's terrifying.
Wall Street Journal said 1 in 25 million, which basically amounts to the fact that you have zero possibility of being killed by a terrorist on an airplane. I mean, zero.
Or anywhere.
Or, yeah.
I mean,
In the United States, post 9/11.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and this has been our political and policy nightmare for, you know, 10 years almost. Because 9/11 was so visually spectacular, you know, it wasn't the death toll, which was awful, and Jesus, the whole thing was fucking terrible, but it was just the imagery of it, the visual, you know, the Michael Bay disaster film.
That's right.
You know, and would just could not have succeeded more wildly.
Yeah. I mean, and they won. I mean, they won. Yeah. They won.
They will continue to until an administration makes it its primary goal to walk that cat back and you know, reset the counters and really start over with the, you know, just somehow reset the counters to where we're just not paralyzed by this shit.
Yeah. And I think what we've lost, and I think a lot of, I mean, I would say across the political spectrum, I think we've lost that sense that, you know, in a free society, we're always going to remain vulnerable in some way. I mean,
especially vulnerable to terrorism.
Yeah.
I mean, almost entirely. I mean, even Great Britain, probably the next best, you know, sort of weird democracy. I mean, they've got a monarchy and all that. Their democracy is a little odd, but they're talk about a police state. You can't take a piss in Britain without getting filmed. Mm-hmm. I mean, they got cameras everywhere. Yeah. So, I mean, really, just thousands and thousands of them. So, absolutely, we are uniquely predisposed to being attacked that way. But that's, you know, it's a cost of an open society.
And you know, it's not surprising that a lot of the responses I've been getting from the right have been, you know, amnesiac. I mean, just ridiculously short-sighted. Like, oh no, wait, well, this is all Big Sis. This is all Napolitano. This is all Barack Obama's fault. Yeah, no, really? Are you serious? You mean you don't remember 8 years of you're either with us or you're with the terrorists?
Right, black and white, good and bad, axis of evil.
That's right. You got to watch what you say and watch what you do, and you shouldn't be talking like that. Bill Maher gets fired, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, even Michael Moore was booed at the Oscars.
Yeah.
I mean, the biggest room full of limousine liberals in the world.
Yeah.
And he was booed during that period of time.
Limousine liberals, that's good. Yeah, Michael Moore annoys me, though.
Regardless of whether he annoys you, I mean,
he didn't deserve that. I'm just saying now. I mean, just he, I don't know. He annoys me.
Yeah.
He's, I think he's sort of the left's Michelle Malkin, just sort of that kind of, he's just not helping. I don't think he helps. There's an interesting, I can't remember where I read it, but it was on some film site, and there was an interesting thing about how modern documentaries are just so, they're just vehicles for a particular ideology. You know, they're not documentaries anymore. You used to go to a documentary to really see sort of an unideological, sort of just straight piece of reporting. You know, it didn't have an agenda. And now documentaries are just so steeped in the filmmaker's agenda, you don't know what the hell you're getting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, documentaries generally do have agendas. I mean,
well, I don't know. Well, I mean, yeah, a story to tell and an agenda, but not necessarily such a deep political slant. I think was the point.
Well,
what's his name? Errol Morris, the guy that does, those are some good, that's some good stuff.
Yeah.
He did the Fog of War and the
Thin
Blue Line. And I love that Fog of War.
Well, I mean, I think there's room for all varieties. I mean, but obviously the ones that are most incendiary are the ones that end up getting the biggest draw.
Yeah,
if Upton Sinclair had access to documentary filmmaking tools, I think, you know, the jungle would have
the
film
like to
version
see
of
that.
The, yeah, the film version of the jungle.
The
would
film
have been,
version of the jungle. Well, that's straightened you out.
That would have had an agenda, obviously. So, yeah. I mean, I think you know, there's room for all kinds, and I think Michael Moore has a place. I mean, you know, what really pisses me off is all the people who try to do documentaries that are flagrant knockoffs of Michael Moore's documentary.
Yeah,
I mean,
think about what Ken Burns does. I mean, that's a documentary, really. That's a documentary filmmaker without a clear. I mean, he I think he leans liberal. I think he's. I mean, he's been on Olbermann and stuff, right?
He's very liberal. Yeah,
politically liberal. Yeah. But I don't see any real ideological fervor in his work. I mean, it's just straight out reportage or just documentarianism.
Well, yeah, I mean he's an historian. Not a political commentator. I mean, Michael Moore has, you know, I mean, I think Fargo, I mean, Fargo.
Fargo.
What the hell am I talking about?
Oh, yeah,
I was thinking Flint, Michigan, and Roger and Me. And
yeah, now Roger and Me was classic, and that was a story that deserved to be told. And again, that the political ideology comes out of the storytelling. I mean, that was just a god-awful, horrible, horrible story. And I can't watch parts of Roger and Me. It's so fucking depressing.
Pets are meat. Yeah.
That woman takes the...
The
rabbit or whatever the fuck. Yeah, I'm just killing that rabbit. Oh my God.
Right. And invariably,
the 12th century.
Exactly. And if Roger and Me is on TV, I will hesitate to watch it because occasionally I've turned it on and it'll be right on the pets or meat scene. Right.
Oh man, that was so bad. Places like Flint, Michigan, and it's even worse now. I mean, like Detroit is just like a fucking Detroit has basically turned into what they thought it was going to be in RoboCop, right? Like just this bombed out. Like they just need Ed 209s and RoboCops in Detroit right now because it's just such a fucking disaster.
Well, what's fascinating is there's kind of a hipster revival of the urban center, and a lot of that. A lot of that property is being renovated, and hipsters are moving into it.
Oh God!
So, it's becoming like, you know. I think Flint, Michigan may end up becoming like the capital of, you know,
hipster doofusism.
Hipster states of America.
Oh my God! I hate hipsters.
Big bushy beards and
yeah,
ironic scarves and
Birkenstocks,
Pabst Blue Ribbon. I mean, I literally know a guy who every week goes out and buys a six-pack of Pabst Blue Ribbon and then takes a picture of it for his blog. Hey, look at me. Look at my PBR.
Wow. You hang in some
hipsters.
High circles there, my friend.
But anyway, I mean, back to the topic. I mean, so it was conservatives and people who now claim to be teabaggers, you know, constitutional conservatives. These are the bastards who are driving this climate. Who manufactured all of this? Who created this this climate of fear that, you know, everyone from the smallest town to the biggest city believe that a terrorist strike against them personally was imminent?
And that's what I don't get. And is the small town, because, you know, I live in a very small town, and I don't get. I mean, there are literally people in this town who have never been east of the Missouri River. I mean, never been on an airplane, never, you know, just don't. And they're the ones. It's this heartland mentality, this people that have never been to a coast, never seen a natural body of water that freak out about this stuff. And I'm like, what? And it's not that I want to give terrorists any ideas, like, you know, Al-Qaeda.com is listening to our podcast. But if they had gone sort of the opposite direction instead of the underwear bombs and everything, just blow a car up, a car bomb in any town USA, you know, next to the butcher shop or over by the co-op would terrorize middle America more than any exploding airplane out over the Pacific.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That would make this country go out of its fucking mind. And how easy would that be to coordinate? Just blow a couple of cars up in 800 people towns, just to boom, and then announce it, and then go crazy saying that they did that. The entire country would eat itself alive.
Right. And you know, in my book.
Oh, you wrote a book.
My book. I'm making air quotes as I say book.
Oh, it's a book. It's got covers.
Yeah, it's got a cover and it's got pages.
And you spelled not only my name wrong in it, but also you misspelled my website. Yeah. So that any Googler that read the acknowledgments that would like, oh, Elvis, would not be able to find me thanks to your misspelling.
Well, that's the least of the issues with the book, the fact that there was really no editor working on it. Was that kind of another thing? I mean, you know, the first draft essentially went to print 3 months late.
Yeah.
I might
add.
It's
a real book, though. It's on my desk.
It's a real book insofar as it's book-shaped.
it has pages.
Right. No, I mean, but I wrote a whole chapter called What's the Matter with Zanesville, Ohio?
All right.
And here's a town that received X tens of thousands of dollars in Homeland Security funding and grants for special anti-terror equipment. Zanesville, Ohio. All right.
This is a town that is the main manufacturing base in this town is AK Steel. AK Steel pumps record amounts of carcinogens into the air. AK Steel has been responsible for killing entire bodies of water, making rivers and streams in parts of Pennsylvania, parts of western Pennsylvania, where there's another AK Steel plant. You can't even swim in it. I mean, it's literally, you can't go in that water. They had to provide, the EPA forced them to provide bottled water for everyone who lives in that area. I'm talking about another AK Steel plant in Pennsylvania. Jesus. But it's only a matter of time before that happens in Zanesville. So, I mean, we're talking about people who are so freaked out by terrorism that they got all of this additional cash to buy special, you know, first responder gear, special anti-terror equipment. And yet, at the same time, there's this factory basically killing them all. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's you know, no one pays any attention to that. I mean... Mm-hmm. And I wrote about this in the Huffington Post yesterday. Your odds of dying of cancer are 1 in 7. I mean, 1 in fucking 7.
Yeah.
But yet the amount of money that we spend on chronic disease in this country is half of what we spend on anti-terror, mm-hmm. security, and things like that. Mm-hmm. Half.
And I don't feel any safer. I have not felt any safer after 9/11 than I felt before 9/11.
Yeah.
At all. I mean, if anything, more unsafe.
Right.
Because of the insanity of Afghanistan and Iraq.
Yeah.
I mean, absolute madness, the things we choose to care about. Because it's not the quiet, silent stalkers that the things that those don't scare us the way they should. It's mm-hmm. the big, loud noise, Michael Bay explosion type things that scare us, that motivate, you know, our spending and our, you know, it's not that we go to Walmart and buy everything in boxes and put, you know, modified genetic genome starches in our body. None of that is scary because when you go to Walmart, the box of Twinkies doesn't explode or crash into a building. Mm-hmm. You know, doesn't contain little tiny Muslims. It's, you know, it's shit that will eventually kill your ass mm-hmm. and make you fat and diabetic and stupid. But that's not sexy and scary and doesn't look like a Michael Bay explosion. So let's spend all this trillions of dollars on fighting something we can't fight.
I mean, here's what I want to see. Here's the stat I want to see, the odds making. What are the odds of being bombarded by radiation from a backscatter machine right. and dying from cancer from that versus right. the odds of actually being killed by a terrorist?
Yeah, that was in that video that Sullivan posted. It was, you know, it was exactly that. It's like, okay, so my odds are better of dying from this backscatter than
really
than ever going to. Yeah, that exactly. It was like a 15-minute video. Oh, it covered everything.
That's brilliant.
It's one of those things where you go on that site and it animates it for you. It's got the little bobblehead guys and it's got the computer voices. It's one of those things. That's brilliant. It's fantastic.
Oh, that's unbelievable. So your odds of dying from the actual naked body scanner are greater than dying from a terrorist.
Well, if you suck enough of it, if you're like a business traveler, I mean, I've got a friend who she's on an airplane. She travels. She's only home like 10 days a year. I mean, she's nothing but travel. Yeah. So somebody like that would just be soaking in that stuff. That can't be good for you. Something that can see through your junk like that just can't be good for you.
And the worst thing is it doesn't really work. I mean, it wouldn't have thwarted the underpants bomber.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have found his, you know, whatever he was wearing, that diaper with thing in it behind
his balls.
That's
the thing. We're always just reacting to the last thing, right? Yeah. Richard Reed tried to blow his fucking feet up, so now we have to take our shoes off.
Yeah.
And then somebody tried to sneak a little liquid that could blow up in, and now we can't. We all have to bring our drinks in little 2-ounce containers or whatever the fuck. We can't bring shaving cream and everything. Yeah. And now we got to get our junk handled because of Christmas Day underpants, idiot.
Yeah.
It's always reactive to the last thing. It's never let's try and stop it to begin with. It's always, well, this is the last thing they did, so fuck. We better react to that. There's no worse agency on earth than the TSA. They're fucking retarded.
Yeah. Yeah.
TSA.
Yeah. I mean, last time I flew, the terror alert status was orange. I mean, it was still like,
it's always orange.
It's always orange.
It's never been, it hasn't been green since 9/11. It's always orange. You can't.
I mean, I think what you get a lot of times is just to use the Fight Club vernacular, it's the illusion of safety. That's all it is. Because, I mean, if you really think about how they collect those liquids at the security line, it's just absurd. And I've mentioned this before, so forgive me if I'm being repetitive. But, I mean, if you're a terrorist and you've got an Evian bottle full of liquid explosive, they're going to grab that bottle away from you and chuck it into a trash can that's right next to all the people. I mean, how stupid is that?
Probably as many people in that line as they're going to be on a fucking plane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're chucking liquid explosive into a trash can that's right fucking there.
And the real tragedy and irony is that, you know, the United States airline fleet is old as fuck. I mean, these things, where was that plane the other day that a fucking engine fell off? You know, that's what we should. Yeah. Why don't we spend all that money renovating the goddamn air fleet in this country? Because these are old, creaky, shitty, engine's going to fall off the thing planes. They've been in service for 20, 30 years. Yeah. And we get on planes all the time. And that guy felt safer now because those terrorists have been screened out, had their buttholes explored. But meanwhile, you're getting in a 30-year-old plane, the entire bottom's going to fall off.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the indignity of just sitting on an airplane is enough indignity, I think, for any human being to endure. I mean, it is a humiliating experience, especially, like, I'm tall, and so if I end up having to sit in a coach seat, that is the worst. I might as well just take the whole flight inside an MRI tube. I mean, it is the most uncomfortable, crammed-in space ever. And then that person...
And they always know how to put you next to the big fat guy.
Yeah, next to the big fat guy or the guy in front of me who wants to recline his seat all the
that
way back.
That always happens to me. The last time I was flying, I told there was an older woman, sort of a grandma type, sitting next to me, and I leaned over and said, now you watch. The moment the sign goes ding, the person in front of me is going to put a seat down on me.
That's right.
And I just said that. And I mean, not even the ding had not even vibrated itself out of the air before this fucker put his seat back on me. And I mean, it just wham, you know, just guillotined back onto my right onto my junk. Mm-hmm. And it always happens to me.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. I have stood up at times to look to see if any other seat is back on a plane. Like, I've been on a 35, 40 minute flight where the guy's got to fucking put his seat back on me.
Mm-hmm.
And I just start making that noise. Oh, making my displeasure known.
Well, and now they used to, you know, maybe 5-10 years ago, you could just request an exit row seat, which is what I used to do. I used to just, when I used to book my tickets, I would request that exit row seat because you get all that extra leg room for the price of a coach seat. Mm-hmm. I'm cheap. But I mean, that's what I would do. But now you have to actually pay extra. I mean, they charge extra for the exit row seat.
Every fucking thing.
Yeah.
It's
so,
unbelievable. I will never, Frontier Airlines, sadly, and fuck you, Frontier, if you're listening, I hate you. They bought out the best airline that has ever operated ever, which is Midwest Express. Midwest Express prior to 9/11 was like getting a blowjob in the air. It was the best airline on earth. They had china and glasses and silverware. The meal was free, and it was a meal. It was a fucking meal. I mean, it was hot and delicious. You would fly this airline just to eat that meal. And then they gave you a big ass chocolate chip cookie and milk, and it was and every seat was a first class seat. It was 2x2s, and they were the double wide leather first class seats.
Wow.
Best airline ever.
Damn.
Now these cock blowers in Frontier bought them out. And the last time I was in Denver on business, they wrapped up the convention a day early, and I had to go back early. And all I wanted to do was to go standby, right?
Mm-hmm.
The whole point of standby is you don't have a reservation. You stand by, right?
Yeah.
So I go up to the counter. I'm there, like, I've got 7 hours before my flight because I the whole day they canceled. So, like, I had like an 8 o'clock flight, and I'm there at like at noon. And I'm like, yeah, I want to go standby because they've got like 6 flights, Omaha, before my flight at fucking 8 o'clock. Okay, that'll be $100. Like, no, you're misunderstanding me. I don't want a reservation. I want to go standby. Oh, we don't do that. What do you mean you don't do that? $100 they were going to charge me for standby. I could not comprehend this. I almost got arrested. I swear to God, Bob, I almost got arrested at this airline. I pitched such a fucking fit. I said, I am not paying. I said, look at me. I am not asking for a reservation. I'm not asking for you to book me a seat. I want you to put me on a list for standby. I will go to the gate where the flight is leaving, and if there's an empty seat, fucking put me on it. I don't have any bags. I've got my little bag here. So mm-hmm. what? No, we don't do that. It's $100. No. You're misunderstanding me. I was at the counter for 35 minutes. They almost had to call somebody to drag me out of there. I'm not a cheap person. I sat on my ass in that airport for 7 hours just out of principle. I'm not kidding. And then I tweeted at Frontier Airlines the entire day how much they suck balls.
Yeah.
Right. I was trying to get like a free, like they I should fly free for the rest of my life on Frontier out of that, but they're just not budging. $100 for standby. I said, that's not standby. That's a reservation. That's not standby. That's a reservation. Mm-hmm. That's not what I'm asking for. I'm going to stay. So they literally flew planes out of that airport, out of Denver, with empty seats while I'm standing there because I wouldn't pay $100. Fuck you, Frontier.
Yeah. This
sons
is terrible.
Of bitches.
Terrible. Terrible. They're going to find
the
any
whole
way.
Airline industry. And then they come and ask for a handout after 9/11. Oh, help us. You've been fucking us in the ass for 30 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now you need a handout because somebody used your plane as a weapon. Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry. You know what? You buy an airline, you're going to have a thin profit margin. That's the way it always has been. And that's the way it's always going to be. Don't fucking take away. Don't try to stack us up like cordwood. Don't stick us in the Indiana Jones airplane with the chickens and the bales of hay. This is not, I mean, it is literally, I mean, you got to leave your dignity at the door. I mean, and that's without all of the bullshit security measures. I mean, if you're flying out of LAX on US Airways, you are screwed. You better arrive 5 hours earlier. You're going to miss your flight.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the line literally goes at the US Airways terminal. At LAX, the line goes from the door all the way down. It must be half a mile. If it's if it's an inch, it's a half a mile. Yeah. All the way down to the next terminal. Yeah.
One good thing about living in Omaha is I can arrive at Omaha at Epley Airport in Omaha literally 10 minutes before my flight leaves.
Yeah.
And that's something my dad never gets. He comes to visit. He's like, well, my flight leaves at 1, so I better be there at 6:15 a.m. I'm like, no, Dad. It's Omaha, dude. You just go and walk the fuck on your plane.
Yeah.
You might as well just pull the plane up to your car.
Mm-hmm. God, that's so great.
That's the good thing about Omaha. That's but so the bad thing is nothing goes directly anywhere. So, like, if I want to go to New York next month, I got to go to fucking Minneapolis first.
Right.
And Minneapolis in December is something I just do not want to do.
Well, I mean, last time I flew out of LAX, I made $40. $40. People paying me to let them, you know, cut in line in front of me.
Get the fuck out of here.
Absolutely. I mean, seriously, you could go and you could actually make a pretty decent day-to-day living just getting
just
in that
line.
Just going in that line. Because as soon as you get down to where the, you know, the sky caps are, where you can check your baggage at the curb, at that point, people are desperate to get in that line. Like all the late travelers.
Yeah, yeah.
Want to get in there. And you could have a sign on you that says, with just a dollar sign on it.
Yeah.
And
people would cut $20
up and hand you cash to
let
them in line.
That is a good idea. I'm going to do that one day. When I have a day off, I'm going to get dressed up in a suit and just go stand in some lines.
Stand in a line.
Just go back and forth to different airlines, standing in line.
I mean, those of you who live in Los Angeles, I mean, and you're unemployed, be a professional line stander.
Wow.
People will pay you.
Discovered a new business.
40 simoleons I made last time, back in March. Yep.
We have a new Bubble Genius commercial, do we not?
Yes, new Bubble Genius commercial. Pure products, pure genius. It's Bubble Genius. Hilarious, all-natural, eco-friendly products for bath, body, and mental well-being at www.bubblegenius.com. New, brand new Bubble Genius commercial, and I won't describe how they described it. So I'm just going to play the commercial.
Bernice, how nice to see you. It's been a long time since we had a kibitz.
Oi, Sarah, what a mishigas. I've been schlepping all over town today.
Well, take a load off. Sit your tuchus down and tell.
You know, I always try to find nice Yiddish gifts for the family. And oi, the raffle for the yeshiva. I like to donate something nice.
You're a good woman, Bernice. Irving, he has no idea. You're too good for him.
He tries. Anyway, everywhere I went today, Bupkis, I don't want to kvetch, but where are useful gifts for us Jews?
So I'm the expert. You schlep from store to store. You don't see me first? Here, have a nice glass tea.
Thanks, Sarah. Tea? This is soap.
You bet, Bernice. Would you like a few bagels to nosh on?
Bagels! Soap bagels! They smell like bagels.
Something a little more traditional, maybe?
Ugh, a menorah and a Star of David soap. So elegant. What is this magic you're showing me?
It's a company called Bubble Genius.
Genius is right. What else do they have? Oy, this could clean the schmutz off the nieces and nephews and they'd enjoy it.
Abyssal mat soap?
Matzah soap. How clever. You can break it apart. Good for Bubby. She's so thrifty.
And these geniuses, they put this all beautiful in a basket. Super Jew, it's called. It's to die
Super
for.
Super Jew.
Perfect for the yeshiva. And you can
Christ.
Buy online, so no schlepping.
Sarah, I'm so happy I could plot. Bubble genius. I'm verklempt.
Oh, we got man. Jew covered.
www.bubblegenius.com. Such a blessing.
Oh man, that's wow. the website is www.bubblegenius.com. Send complaint letters to them. That was actually very great. That was,
wow.
Oh man, just in time for Hanukkah too. Your bagel soaps and bagel matzo. Show today also brought to you by Pomegranate Journeys, the cure for the common vacation at www.pomegranate.travel. No word from Virgilio. I don't know what happened to Virgilio. I mean, he's doing a show, he's doing great little songs, and I mean, I really need my ego stroked with another, like, Bob and Elvis song in the midst of a commercial about Pomegranate Journeys. But Pomegranate Journeys combines several of my personal favorite things in the whole world. Food, wine, and cycling. And, of course, Europe. And it's really a unique travel company. If you want to see France and Italy by bicycle, you can really experience the landscape that way. Visit Pomegranate's updated website at pomegranate.travel. See the new trips, a new hiking photography trip in Italy's famous Cinque Terre. Pomegranate offers tours in a variety of skill levels for cycling, and several trips designed specifically for beginners. So if you're worried about not being able to do it, don't worry. These tours will be a perfect introduction to the magic of travel by bike. It could very well transform your life. Not to undersell it too much, but it will change your life. Mm-hmm. While you're at the homepage, please make sure to visit make sure to sign up for the newsletter. Mention the Bob and Elvis show and receive a $100 trip credit. $100 off your trip if you mention the Bob and Elvis show. Useful anytime with no expiry. So there you go. Pomegranate Journeys. Cure for the common vacation at www.pomegranate.travel.
The Bob and Elvis show.
Right. That was the first time I ran out of the music for Pomegranate Journeys. But, with the holidays coming up, going back to Bubble Genius, you want to put your orders in now because, I mean, all their stuff is handmade. I mean, they don't fuck around.
They made peanut. Did I tell you this last time? They made peanut a chocolate ice cream cone soap.
No, really?
Well, they didn't make it for her, but they sent her one.
Oh, okay.
And it looks like a little soft serve chocolate ice cream cone. It smells like chocolate ice cream. And she said, Peanut says, how do they do that? And I said, I don't know. She said, that's why they call them Bubble Genius. And I was like, oh, right. Why don't I have a camera running on you all the time? What a perfect little commercial. Because she won't do anything. Not that I would let her, but she won't do anything. She won't let me record her in any way, which I'm actually glad about. But she would do some cute little. When I was doing my old show, the drunken soliloquy and then the gut reaction show, I wanted her to cut a few spots for me, and she wouldn't. She's just too painfully, cripplingly shy.
Yeah. I mean, if you could record her saying just the Bob and Elvis show, Yeah, that would be
like,
so,
hey,
so
great. Hey, Ken Stevens, give my daddy more money.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah,
remember that? And now Bart's like married. We're so old.
That is, we're really old, really old. I mean, I remember distinctly when Bart Geronimo, Don Geronimo's boy, was born. I mean, it was, and they were still doing the morning zoo at the time. They were still the WAVA, 105 WAVA, all hit power, 105. You know, they were doing the morning zoo at the time. That's when, and Mike was still married to Billy. His wife was named Billy. Right. I always thought that was. Mm-hmm. In fact, I initially thought that he was gay because he would always talk about Billy. I don't know why.
Mike was awesome. But back then, I didn't really become a Don and Mike fan until the JFK days.
Oh, yeah.
I was always a Grease Man guy.
Oh, my God. Really?
Oh, I love the fucking Grease Man. Are you kidding?
I liked the Grease Man for about 10 minutes.
Oh, no. We used to sit in my car, my 1980 Buick Century, outside of Lake Braddock. On Lake Braddock Drive there. Sit in my car with our feet up, listening to Grease Man eating breakfast before school.
Hobble de gee.
I knew all the songs. And I mean, he was just classic boy stuff. No women liked Grease Man.
Yeah.
Trashy women, maybe. But he was great.
Yeah, Grease Man. He's still doing that same thing.
Isn't he? That's
where he's still doing like the, you know, back in Vietnam where, you know.
Yeah.
Like every Vietnam, his Sergeant Fury was, I guess he was doing that Sergeant Fury. Because he does, and those of you who don't know Grease Man, I mean, basically what Grease Man does is he does these like impromptu stories where he becomes like a character. It's almost like radio theater.
Yeah. And it's really pretty good too. I mean, considering.
Well, yeah. I
mean, he does this voice. He calls himself Nino Grease Manelli. What was his real name?
His real name is so lame. It's like Doug Tracht or
Doug
something.
Tracht.
Like Doug
Tracht. Right. Yeah. Doug Tracht. Yeah. The Grease Nino Grease Manelli, and he would do this voice, and he got banned. He got fucking fined and turned off like 12 times. He said something about Marion Barry, and I mean, but Nino Grease Manelli, the character, was just this virulent racist. I mean, he was just a douche. But that was the shtick, right? I mean. When it's Howard Stern, it's just Howard Stern. It's just that's Howard Stern. That's just him.
Well, that's
Grease Man was a character.
I mean, I
Andrew Dice Clay.
I always preferred Stern because I always thought Stern was a little more real. Now, the stuff that I like about Stern is when he would talk about his life and his wife and his kids.
You know, and that's interesting. I completely tuned Stern out when he got divorced because it completely changed his persona to me.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, now you're divorced. Okay. You're not cool anymore because his marriage was something to me that really that was amazing to me, and that was the best part of that movie, Private Parts. Was even though I can't stand Michelle McDonald or whatever the hell
Mary McCormick,
yeah, but especially on West Wing, oh my
really?
God, could not stand her on that show. But anyway, that was the cool thing about Howard was that he shoot his mouth off and he had naked girls. Sit on his lap all day, but then he'd go home and he was just like a normal schlup.
Well, whenever Stern or any radio guy, with the exception of Don and Mike, because I basically like anything that Don and Mike does or did. But whenever Stern or and this is what I didn't like. I mean, I didn't like Grease Man because it was just so phony. It was so fake. And in contrast to because in Washington on DC 101, it was Howard Stern. And he lasted, I don't know, for like a year or so. And I listened to that show. And then he was fired for calling Air Florida and asking for a one-way ticket to the 14th Street Bridge, which was
that was pretty bad.
Heinous, yeah.
Yeah. And then, in fact, you know, that day my dad had to cross the 14th Street Bridge every night to get home.
Yeah, so did my dad,
from work. And me and my mom were glued to that shit.
Yeah.
Because, you know, no cell phones back then. And watching that fucking videotape of that snowy bridge, man, that was terrifying.
And those guys, the guys diving in, and that, you know, the people in the water. I mean, geez.
Yeah, God, that was awful.
Yeah, I mean, there was like a series of traumatic events in like 1981. They all happened like right on top of you. It's like Air Florida,
Reagan getting shot.
Reagan, the Pope was shot at that time.
Fucking Lennon,
John Lennon.
It was a rough start to the decade.
But anyway, I mean, so Stern was always very real, and whenever Stern though does bits, whenever he would do like a either a pre-recorded bit or some sort of game show like thing, I mean, that's when I generally, and I don't listen to Stern anymore, but that, I mean, that's when I would tune out. But when he talks about his personal life and sort of because he's talks about his insecurities and things like that and how. You know, yeah, I mean, just real. Like family life stuff too. I mean, this all like, that was all very, very entertaining and very compelling. When Stern talks about his dad.
Yeah.
I mean, that
in the early days in radio. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that is just brilliant, brilliant. I could listen to him play those tapes of his dad in the recording studio.
Shut up.
Shut up. Sit down.
You idiot.
Yeah. I mean, I could listen to that all day.
Yeah.
All day. Talking about how his dad was always, I told you not to be stupid, you moron. Yeah. You know, yeah, just so relatable. I mean, I just relate to all that stuff.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Ben Stern, in a lot of ways, is like my dad. Right. I mean, it's so similar. Some of the things. I mean, my dad never said to me, I told you not to be stupid, you moron. My dad never called me a moron. But that same sort of, like, overbearing fatherly, like, dignity and the rules. You know, like, Sturris talks about how his dad had specific rules about ordering at a restaurant.
Really?
Like, little stories like that just... I mean, that's what I really loved about the Stern Show. But anyway, I don't know how we end up on that.
I don't know.
But so the Grease Man, though. The Grease Man, yeah, it just, I ended up prank calling the Grease Man for the Don and Mike Show when I was working on the Don and Mike Show.
Oh, my God.
Because remember the JFK turned into the superstation, WJFK, where they had Howard Stern, then G. Gordon Liddy, then Don and Mike, and then the Grease Man at night. So the Grease Man would come on after Don and Mike.
Yeah. And he's so just not a – he was so a morning drive kind of guy.
Yeah.
Just didn't work at night.
Yeah, and so he wasn't playing music. I mean, the thing about Grease Man, what made Grease Man successful in the morning was I think with the songs that he – like the classic rock DC 101 songs, he could actually prepare bits to do. So he would play like three songs in a row and then come back and do like – I don't know, like a – he used to do like this toe monster or something about his boat, you know.
Yeah.
And so he could prepare for that. But it just became so jive and I don't know.
Yeah.
You say that put on personality was just kind of lame to me.
Speaking of jive, the Palins sure are in the news.
Yeah, that's true. And
Jesus Christ, what a train wreck.
Yeah. And I think the latest thing is evidently she sat down with Barbara Walters. Mm-hmm. And the only glimpse we've seen so far of that is Barbara Walters asking her if she's going to run for president.
Yeah.
And her response to that is basically like, well, if the discourse will benefit from me running.
Oh, my God.
Which basically says to me, no, she's not going to run because it's not going to benefit from her running.
She will, and just the narcissism of this family is unparalleled in human history, I think. I've never seen, you'd think they would have the very, very basic common sense to school all their many, many, many ridiculously named children to stay off the fucking internet, you know? Or if you're going to post something, don't say faggot, you know? Just a very basic, they're just so clueless about message discipline, about any kind of discipline. It's I cannot wait. Please God, please make it through the primaries.
Yeah.
Please, but they won't. She won't. She'll run, but she won't. She won't get nominated.
I don't know. I mean, it depends if it depends how the momentum behind all the crazy happens. I mean, because there's a lot of crazy out there amongst the Republicans, and if that continues to rise.
Yeah, which it will.
Yeah, then
it's got nowhere to go right now. I mean, it's got no, like I said, it's got no relief valve. It's got to and Romney is not the answer to crazy, right? The crazies are not going to nominate Romney. He is so not the poster boy for schizo nutso political relief valve. They need somebody nuts, you know, some total nut job.
Right.
So if it, Romney seems to be the fit, but these straw polls that go on this early, those are only very, very serious, wonky, people that they're polling there. It's not, I don't think the crazy seeps into those things.
Well, I mean, are you talking about like the poll where she even loses in Alaska?
I mean, it's just bad. It's so horrible. And I tweeted yesterday that, when they finally said Murkowski, goes, you know, made it. I was like, her fans would see that. Somehow she would be able to spin that in a positive way for herself, and her fans would buy it. I mean, it's just so ludicrous.
Yeah.
The reality of her, and that's one of the main reasons I traffic Sullivan so much, is that he's one of the great repositories of just her. I mean, he's keeping track of her lies.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. One after the other. It's just, it's mind-boggling.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but both sides lie. Don't you know that?
Oh, right.
Because, you know, Barack Obama's a liar, too, so therefore...
And Nancy Pelosi is less popular than Dick Cheney.
Yeah, because of her face. And that's exactly
why. And
she's
from San Francisco.
You know, I mean, a couple of weeks ago, I wanted to talk about, you know, like Bill O'Reilly played, you know, he always has these body gesture experts. Body language experts, and they were analyzing Nancy Pelosi, and the only thing they could come up with was Nancy Pelosi uses Botox. Therefore she's, you know, we hate her. Nancy Pelosi from San Francisco, therefore she sucks. You ask around, ask any of these people, what do you dislike about Nancy Pelosi specifically? Well, I don't know. I hate her face. Yeah. She's ugly.
Yeah. Yeah. Couldn't tell you a single policy thing that
couldn't tell you damn
they
thing.
Dislike her over. Couldn't tell you anything.
Right.
I don't understand the virulence of the anti-Pelosi movement.
Yeah.
The anti-Reed, I get. I get that completely. I could tell you 700 things. Mm-hmm. Make me want to frog stomp that dumbass. But Pelosi, she's got a net negative 25-point negative review, negative rating.
Yeah.
25%. Cheney's only got a net negative 17. Turned America into a torture state.
Yeah.
A torture country is more popular than Nancy Pelosi by a country mile.
Yeah. But
what
I mean,
the fuck?
And here's how imaging works on television and, you know, especially amongst wingnuts and places like Fox News Channel. I mean, Sarah Palin, according to the latest CBS poll, Sarah Palin is viewed favorably by just 22% of Americans. I mean, you would never know that watching cable news. You watch cable news or look at the stupid fucking, you know, misleading ratings on TLC.
Yeah.
You get this impression that Sarah Palin is the most popular person in the world.
Uh-huh.
She's not. People don't like her. In her home state, she loses to Huckabee. She loses to Newt Gingrich, who's not even going to run. She loses to Mitt Romney in Alaska. Uh-huh. Alaska.
What other public figure with that kind of negative rating gets that much airtime and attention?
Yeah.
Who else that's that unpopular could possibly get that much media play?
Mm-hmm.
It boggles the mind. Thank you, John McCain, you dick.
48% of Americans have an unfavorable view of Palin. That includes 73% of Democrats, 44% of independents, and 22% of Republicans.
That independent number is a good one. And that's just going to keep going up.
Yeah.
That's the most important one.
But those 22, I mean, oh, that's unfavorable. The people who like her, though, love her. I mean,
oh, and they're loud. They're the loud noises crew. They can't tell you why they love her, really.
I mean,
anything that they could pull out of their ass is wrong.
That's
there's
right.
been this fascinating dissemination of Sarah's, Miss Palin's, the way she fishes and the way she stands up in the boat and the things she did. Like, she just, all of it is made up. You know, she's not outdoorsy.
Yeah.
She's, everything is a lie. Everything.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Everything.
That's right. And it's all indicated in that. There's that one clip. I didn't watch her show on TLC. But
no, I didn't even know it had aired. I refuse.
There's that scene where they're out shooting. They're shooting guns in the woods. Whatever. I don't know what the fuck they're doing.
With shotguns.
Shotguns.
And she's got it, like, off the hip.
Yeah.
I mean, even I, the liberalist liberal in the liberal sphere, know how to fucking handle a gun.
Yeah.
Peanut and I were out the other day shooting 22s at Christmas lights. How redneck is that?
And did you say, don't retreat, reload? Because that's what she says to Willow or whoever the fuck she's talking to. She says, don't retreat, reload.
I had a strand of big bulb Christmas lights way up in a tree from, like, 4 years ago, that I just never could be asked to, you know, get the ladder out and tear them down. So I just got my 22 out and shot them out.
But I mean,
fucking redneck I've become.
Again, I mean, people who like her love her, and they will like jump in front of a train. For Sarah Palin. I mean, I don't want to throw anyone under a bus here, but I mean, a close family member, like jumped down my throat when I was criticizing Sarah Palin, and I mean, to the point of making a personal attack against me, a family member to defend Sarah Palin made a personal attack against me. I mean, against what I do, against, you know, I mean, it was I couldn't believe it. I mean, I was floored.
Wow.
That
it's Palin derangement. They'll tell you it's Palin derangement syndrome.
Yeah.
I went to college with a guy who I later caught up with. It turned out that he went to law school after college, and we had lost touch. And he went to law school after college, became a pretty highfalutin lawyer. In fact, he worked for Bush's counsel on bioethics. So that's where I met the Romulan Krauthammer. I went over to this guy's office one day to take him to lunch, and there's Krauthammer. I'm like, holy shit, I'm just landed in Romulus. he had an office there, and there's fucking Romulan. But he and I think we finally parted ways because he's such a fucking wingnut now. But he's just really hardcore into bioethics and, you know, anti-abortion. He's super Catholic. But when I was trying to argue some Palin stuff during the 2008 election, he accused me of suffering from Palin derangement syndrome. Ugh. And I'm like, no, I know you, man. We went to college together. I know you are a smart guy. What the fuck is going on here? This is not a dummy. Mm-hmm. This is, I mean, he's absolutely the opposite of anti-elitist. Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm just like, you know, you're suffering from Palin, from the opposite of that. Palin fucking up Palin's ass syndrome. I don't know what the opposite is, but Jesus.
Right. And the person who attacked me in defense of Sarah Palin is extraordinarily smart, extraordinarily pragmatic. Hmm. I mean, buttoned down to the nth degree. I was flabbergasted. And also, you know what else is, we're like extraordinarily late. I mean, we're an hour in now. We've done one commercial. Yeah. Where does the time go? I mean, last week was the longest show we've ever done. It was an hour and 15 minutes. So if you're listening in and you want us to do more show every week, well, you're getting it.
Some sponsors.
You're getting it. Absolutely. Well, we would love more sponsors because we'd love to do two shows a week. And then if we pick up more sponsors after that, we do maybe three shows a week. And then eventually we can do five shows a week.
All up to you, people.
That's right. So if you know anyone who has a business.
Find us sponsors.
Find us sponsors, please. Do our work for us.
Yes. Who's the producer of this show, by the way?
Yeah, good Lord. Someone tell me when it's an hour into the show and we haven't done our second commercial break yet. Pure Products, Pure Genius, Bubble Genius, sponsoring today's show and every week. By the way, enter promo code Bob and Elvis. If you're shopping for holiday gifts, remember, a week from tomorrow is like Black Friday. It's unbelievable. Remember to enter.
So not prepared this year.
I know. Me neither. Enter promo code Bob and Elvis, BOBANDELVIS. Get 15% off your entire order. Some notes from Bubble Genius. This is all good stuff. They're very busy, of course, because they're handcrafting their soaps for you. They actually sculpt the molds themselves. They make each soap. They package all of this stuff themselves. And if you follow Bubble Genius on Twitter, it's like you'll see, like, in the middle of the night, up making soap, sleep deprived, about to pass out in the soap, you know.
They do good work.
Also, by the way, go to their Facebook page and check out the I voted pictures on their wall. They're adorable. Thanks to all the Bob and Elvis listeners, they say, that bought soap for the troops. They're making whole big-ass batch of stuff this week.
Yeah, seriously, people, go buy some soap.
Bubble Genius strives to be good to your skin while also being good to the planet. Most of their packaging is recyclable. They source their ingredients close to home as possible, thereby supporting other local and domestic businesses while cutting down on fossil fuel consumption. By not having stuff shipped from across the globe, they do their best to use organic ingredients when they're accessible and affordable. And their soaps are free of chemical detergents and surfactants. www.bubblegenius.com. If you don't do your holiday shopping at Bubble Genius, I'm going to come to your house, and I'm going to smack you silly. And that's a promise.
You could probably expect some jail time if you did that.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's possible.
Shove Bob and Elvis into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Elvis Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
I mean, seriously, I'm just going to drive around, and if I walk into a Target or a Walmart and you're there buying shit for Christmas at a Target or a Walmart, I'm just going to smack you. I'm just going to run up and punch you right in the face.
Wow.
Yeah.
That would definitely get you some time in the Gray Bar Hotel. you ever done any jail time?
Me? No.
Really?
No. Have you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, really?
Oh, yeah.
I almost did some jail time.
Not prison. I've never been to prison, but I've been to jail.
Was this alcohol related or was this traffic related? What?
Yeah, no. No, absolutely alcohol related. Most of it. One was a teenage, one was just terribly reckless and endangering.
Yeah. Well, what happened? What happened? Okay. All right, fine.
Me and some friends back in Virginia thought the height of hilarity and holiday cheer was to pile into my buddy's Jeep Wrangler, which he called the Lone Wolf because he was a huge Chuck Norris fan, Lone Wolf McQuade. So yeah. They called it the Lone Wolf. The license plate said LNEWLF. And the Lone Wolf had a winch in the back. And what we thought was hysterical to do around the holidays was to pull it up behind, you know, back it up to a highly decorated tree with all the lights, you know, in McLean, sort of in that area with the million-dollar houses and the big giant trees, and attach one end of the light strand to the Lone Wolf. And then to turn donuts around the tree on their lawn until the lights were unraveled, and then just tear off, and they would go clanking down the street behind us. We thought that was absolutely hilarious. Had many, many adventures in the Lone Wolf and got caught once.
All right.
And thrown in the pokey.
You dick.
Yeah, because we got mouthy. Yeah. We earned ourselves a special place in county lockup that night. I had to spend the night, so that was fun.
Well, yeah, and
scare us straight, but didn't work.
Yeah, good. Yeah, good.
The guy that drove the driver, it just lacked the gene for caution of any kind. I mean, it just literally whatever it is that tells you and me normal humans, oh, maybe that's not a good idea. He doesn't have that.
He does not have that. Clearly in prison now.
I haven't heard from him in a long time, and he has no Google footprint. So yeah, he's probably either in jail or he has perished.
He's in jail.
Yeah. He one time we were driving around Springfield looking for his. He worked at a Baskin Robbins. This is the guy. I think I told you the guy that used to put his junk in the ice cream cakes. That was if a customer was rude to him in his Baskin Robbins when he was making the ice cream cake or whatever it was, he would leave a deep impression of his junk in the cake. His special contribution to the ice cream was to leave a little channel there. So yeah, that's that guy. But we were driving through Springfield one day, and he goes, "Oh, there it is." It was like 10 o'clock at night, pitch black. He goes, "Oh, there it is," and he grabs the wheel of the Buick, the 1980 Buick Century, and jerks it so hard to the left across oncoming traffic, and there was a car coming, and I had to lay on the gas, and I hit a curb in front of a car dealership that was about a 3-foot curb, turned the front rims into Pac-Mans. When they stripped the tires off, the rims looked like Pac-Mans. They were so completely punched in. They just had giant triangular punch outs in them because we hit this curb so hard. So that's that guy.
Yeah. 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 Well, as close I ever came to going to prison was, my brother was house sitting. I was home from college. I think my first year of college, I was home for the weekend. My brother was house sitting, so he just have a party at this house, you know, when the actual owners of the house weren't home. And so I'm sitting there on the couch in this bed, and I'm there, you know, which is really smart.
Yeah.
Really smart. That's smart, because basically we're trespassing.
Nice.
Yeah. So
you threw a party in somebody's house that nobody at the party owned the house?
Well, yeah, the daughter was there. My brother was dating, I believe. I think that's how it goes. So I'm sitting there with a friend of mine, and we're sitting watching TV in the basement and drinking beer. And I look up at the basement door, which is like a sliding glass door, and there are three police officers standing there knocking on the door.
Nice.
So I go in and I let them in. I just walk up and just open the door, and they rush on right past me and upstairs to where most of the people were. And I just walked out the back door.
Nice. Chicken shit.
I just walked on out and, you know, into the sort of, there's a wood line between some of the houses. I walked through the woods onto the sidewalk and stood there on the sidewalk as everyone was hauled out in handcuffs.
Nice.
So I,
wow,
you know,
really? In handcuffs?
In handcuffs.
Holy shit.
In handcuffs. And then so I drove home. And I really had maybe had a third of a beer at that point. So I wasn't drinking and driving. But I drove home and got to listen to my mom screaming at my brother for what must have been 2.5 hours.
Nice.
Because she had to go to the police station and pick him up.
I almost got arrested on a felony kidnapping charge.
Oh, no. What? What?
Yeah. Well, intent to... It's one of the more fascinating stories of my life, but long story short, very
felony
long story short.
Felony kidnapping.
I was... Well, look, I'm not kidding. This is how stupid I was in my teens. I went through a phase for some god-awful reason. I was in a real Indiana Jones phase, and I wanted a fedora. I had to have a fedora.
Oh my
so
God.
I got myself a fedora, and my mother, who used to dress me until I was about 25, bought me a London Fog, a really nice London Fog trench coat. So here's a guy in a trench coat and a fedora.
So yeah, so you look like a child molester at this point.
Oh, I could not look more like, you know, Chester the molester.
Yeah, that's right.
So I'm already dressed for it. Uh-huh. And I'm in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, which is where I grew up, and visiting for the holidays. And I wanted to go see my ex-girlfriend. Every summer I'd go to Hattiesburg, there'd be this girl there, Stephanie, and I was madly in love with her, and we dated and blah, blah. But this year she was dating some other douche, some total douche. And I said,
another
well, I
douche,
really
not, not you, the douche, another douche.
No, this other guy's a douche,
okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But it was the first year, the first time I'd been back since we had sort of broken up, this sort of long-distance relationship. Mm-hmm. So I said, look, I want to go see Stephanie. And my friend Ben, who drove this fucking beat-up, literally the family truckster, the Griswold family truckster, just this beat-up station wagon. he's like, oh, I know where he lives. She's at this party with this douche. And I'm like, well, let's go. Let's just go to the party. Let's go. We didn't get invited, and he doesn't like me, and I wasn't about to start anything with him. I just wanted to see her. So he's like, oh, I know where he lives, so we'll go over there. So we drive over there. It's me and Ben and Ben's girlfriend and in this family truckster. So they stay in the car. I get out. Again, trench coat, fedora. Fat guy, right? This fairly tall but fat, definitely just looking like Chester the Molester at this point. And it's this is New Year's Eve. So it's New Year's Eve, and it's about 11:35, 11:40, before the big, you know, New Year's. I wanted to see her before New Year's. I was overly romantic. I was thinking like say anything terms, like it would I could win her away, yeah. And right at midnight
with your
the
fedora,
whole town goes crazy. I'd kiss her, and that would be that.
Right.
So Ben goes, okay, that's his house right there. It's this dark street. Ben goes, that's the house. So I go over there, and because it's late and it's New Year's Eve, it's a big occasion. The family, the house where my girlfriend is, has the lights on outside, and there's some very wee children, some little kids playing basketball. Now, this is Mississippi, so it's fairly warm. It's trench coat weather, I guess, because I have my trench coat on.
Trench coat and fedora.
Trench coat and fedora. So here's how smart
I
am.
No pants.
Listeners, here's how smart I am. Yeah. I go up to a stranger's house who doesn't know me from fuck, and I don't even live in Hattiesburg right now. I'm visiting. I go up to this brightly lit basketball court attached to this enormous house, and there's some wee children, and I mean there are maybe five or six, I mean these are wee children, and I go up in a fedora and a fucking trench coat,
no pants,
and I stand in the dark in the shadows, because here's my idea: I'm gonna send one of the kids in to get Stephanie, right?
Uh-huh.
I'm gonna say hey, go in there and find Stephanie and tell her to come out. So that's my brilliant idea, because I didn't want to walk up to the door and this guy punched me in my nuts because I'm, you know, it's his girlfriend.
Yeah.
So I go up to the kid and I'm in the shadows. So I'm back. I'm like, all the light is in front of me. So here's this shadowy guy in a fucking trench coat and fedora. And I go up to a 6-year-old kid and I go, not even kidding, this is what I said: hey, kid, come here. McGruff the crime dog should have landed on my face for, you know, just the archetypical. And the kids stand there like I just took my junk out. They're just paralyzed with fear. Because here's this bulky guy in this trench coat and fedora going, psst, hey, kid, come here. You know? And they all go, ah! And they run inside screaming, dad. And I'm like, then it just starts to dawn on me slowly what I've done and what I look like. And I start hauling ass, like running, fat guy running with my feet flying.
With a trench coat sort of swinging behind you like a cape.
Like, flailing like Neo behind me. Like,
yeah,
oh.
Billowing. And,
I get to the car. I basically jump in the door and I'm like, punch it. Like, you got to get
punch
out of
it,
here.
Right?
Punch it. Go. Get out of here. So literally for the next 25 minutes, a high-speed car chase ensues.
And then Reggie the Snake there in your seat. And you got
the guys. The guys chasing us had shotguns. They were literally hanging out the doors, hanging out the windows with shotguns. They didn't ever fire one at us, but we were being chased, high speed pursuit in a family truckster by a pickup truck full of guys with shotguns.
Firing their shotguns.
I was trying to abduct the children.
Yeah.
So here's how the story ended and why it was so funny. We get back, we're like, look, the best thing, we finally outran them. We finally got across a railroad track and got into a bad part of town where apparently they had warrants or there was some trouble or something. Mm-hmm. And for some reason they didn't follow us. When we finally had a little quorum to figure out what the fuck to do. And we said, look, we'll just go back. It's Stephanie's there. She knows me, right? We'll just go back.
Yeah.
Because we were really only fleeing because they had guns. And because they thought I was trying to kidnap their child. And if they had pinned me down, I wouldn't have had time to say, no, look, my girlfriend's there. So we're like, look, we'll just go back. And Stephanie will vouch for me. And it's all a big mistake. We'll laugh. And we'll have some eggnog. So we go back to the house. This guy who she was dating, his last name was Black. We get up to the house and there's three cruisers there, three cop cars there on New Year's Eve night. So you know they emptied the fucking station for this manhunt to look for this kidnapper. There's three cruisers in the driveway and one like on the lawn with their lights going. Get up to the house and a big plaque by the door says, "Welcome to the Freemans." Wasn't even the right house. There's nobody there to vouch for me. Wasn't even the right house. Ben's about to knock on the door and he goes, "Y'all, this is the Freeman's house." I'm like, "Who the fuck are the Freemans? Who are the Where's the Black's house? What are we doing? What are we doing?" And he's already knocked. And I'm like, "What are we gonna say? That there's nobody to vouch for us. Nobody to vouch for us." And it was a disaster. We had to sit there. I cried.
Cried. In your fedora and your big trench coat.
That was the end pants. Of the fedora and trench coat
that
combo.
Was it.
By the way,
that was it. Because they were all soaked with tears at that point. So ruined. Nicely done.
I'm a Christmas card.
Yeah.
Sorry I tried to kidnap your kids. I hope they're not scarred for life.
Wow. And if there's any teenagers listening in at home, this is exactly what not to do when you're trying to win back the love of a woman.
My whole life is a manual of what not to do.
Unbelievable. Oh, yeah. And I wanted to update you, too, before we wrap up. On Little People Big World this week, Matt Roloff needs hamburger meat. That was the whole thing. The whole show, I think, basically revolved around Matt Roloff wanting hamburger meat.
They don't sell ground beef in his mythical town.
I don't know.
It doesn't exist. TLC.
No. TLC, home of the Sarah Palin Show.
I just don't believe that. So.
And speaking of TLC, if you really care to know, the ratings were, you know, okay. Yeah, she did all right. But it's all curiosity. I mean, I think that's
with anything she does, half the people watching are hoping she, you know, gets eaten by a bear.
Yeah. They did really well in the ratings, but I think it's just morbid curiosity. Again,
of course.
She's not beloved, it's just like a spectacle. That's all it is.
The number that will count is next week's number. This coming week's number. The drop-off between the premiere and the next episode. That's what will count.
Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely. You fudge with us. You fudge with the best. We won't be back next week. Thanksgiving break. But we'll be back in 2 weeks. Have a great Thanksgiving, everyone. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.